Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Saturday, October 29th, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, if you listen to it every week, you listen to episodes more than once, you download it, you retweet, if you listen to this thing, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made to go to Whole Foods and get overpriced, fancy spaghetti sauce. I will never do that again. That was the second time that I did that. I thought I was saving myself some time. And the spaghetti, see, so let me break this down. So there's a new Whole Foods that opened in a town that's near me, and I don't know what it is. I think maybe because my dad worked at a grocery store chain for so long, I like grocery stores, I guess. And I like to see, you know, I like to go in them. And I went to the new Whole Foods, and actually it's really convenient for me. It's really convenient for me because on my way home from work, if I don't have any like shows or anything, if I'm just going home, and I need something, I can stop off, and then I don't have to go. You guys kind of get the point. But it's very convenient. So the first time. Listen, let me just break this down. The first time that I went into this Whole Foods, it was a shit show. It was a nut house. It had just opened. It was Friday night, and it was lit. I mean, white people, they really love what I think Whole Foods is like Popeyes for white people. I really do. They love it. And I like Whole. I'm not going to front. I'm staring at a Whole Foods paper bag right now in my apartment. I like it, but I'm not going to get all of my groceries there. I'm going to get a couple things and I'm going to spend $50 and I'm going to be out. You know, that's it. So I decided, okay, it's Wednesday night. It's Wednesday night. I want to make some spaghetti. I like their beef. They have good ground beef. It's really good. So I got some ground beef and to make some meatballs. And I said, I'm getting my ground beef. And I was like, all right, let me see. I need some olive oil. And they had olive oil. The olive oil cost like $20 and $9 and $16. I'm like, I'm not doing that. So I'm just going to get it from somewhere else. So I was like, all right, since I'm in here, let me see the options that they have for their spaghetti sauce. And I looked and I said, you know, reasonably priced, you know, some was like $5, $6, $8, like 2 for $8. And I got this, I'm not even going to say the type that I got, but it was this sauce that was like, I looked it up. I said, Wall Street Journal says this is the best spaghetti sauce ever. This is one of the top 5 spaghetti sauces in your life. And I was like, all right, let me see what's good with it. Let me see. I'm going to try it. I'm going to be adventurous. I'm going to take a walk on the wild side and try the spaghetti. And it was just mediocre. It had no flavor. Even after I added, like, normally I'll add onions. I added onions, green peppers, and my little spices or whatever. And it was just mediocre. And I was really disappointed. And so I've got things that I could do the next time. It's obviously, most of the time spaghetti tastes better when the leftovers taste better, you know, after everything settled and all the chemical. Anyway, that was a decision that I don't think I'll ever make again. I should have just, if I wasn't going to make the spaghetti sauce from scratch or use a recipe that one of my former coworkers gave me, if I'm not doing that, I'm going to just stick with the Old Faithful. I'm going to just stick with the ragu and just add my vegetables to it and my meatballs and do it that way. Never again will I get froofy, fancy spaghetti sauce and try to act like I'm somebody that I'm not. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to be a conservative about my spaghetti sauce. Maybe other things in my life I'll grow and evolve as a human being, but spaghetti sauce, if I'm not making it myself, it's ragu. It's like traditional old world style. Like I'm not deviating from that ever again. All right. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 191. I have a super special guest, a very talented comedian, an actress by the name of Megan Gailey, out of Indianapolis, Chicago, New York. She's living in LA, but she's a Midwestern girl, you know? So we're going to get to Megan in a bit. I'm excited to share that conversation with you. It's really early right now. I'm recording this intro really early. It's like 6:45. I mean, that's not super early like last week when I did it, but I've been up for a while. I just finished watching that Kevin Hart and The Rock movie, Central Intelligence. Redbox, I made it a Redbox night, you know, and really funny, really enjoyed it. Just a enjoyable movie, action. I laughed a couple times, like I'm in my apartment on my couch by myself laughing. It was funny. It was really good. I enjoyed it. It's very, very satisfying movie. I also rented this movie, Me Before You, this romance movie, like with Emilia Clarke, and she's from Game of Thrones, and it's about this woman, young woman that takes care of a guy who's a quadriplegic or whatever, and their story together. I didn't know. I knew Emilia Clarke was hot. I've never seen Game of Thrones. She's hot and sexy or whatever. But my God, she's adorable. Jesus Christ. She's super adorable, super cute. And that the movie was... It was all right. It was all right for a romantic movie. I'm wondering, though, and you can tweet at me or email me, do British people do romance movies and rom-coms better than the U.S.? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not 100% sure if that's true, but I'm throwing it out there. It just seems like I'm trying to think of the movie I saw, About Time. That was good. That was like a romance. It's no one was really a rom kind of rom-commy. The Brits kind of teeter on the edge of being a rom-com, but it's kind of dark. It's like somebody dies, almost like a Nicholas Sparks movie, where, you know what, like the Nicholas Sparks, like it'll be romantic, but somebody's got to die. And I don't think the last Nicholas Sparks movie, I don't think that I saw, nobody died in that. But anyway, I used to do a bit about that. But Me Before You, it's cute. Like, it's worth seeing for if you're a dude or whatever. If you like Emilia Clarke, she's adorable. What else? I didn't have any shows. I did some shows. I got some shows coming up in November because I'm prepping for something in December that I don't think that I'm going. I don't think I can. It's not like it's high, super secret or anything, but it's a show that I'm doing I'm really excited about, and I don't think it's been announced yet. So, it's whatever. I'll talk about it eventually. And I shouldn't have brought that up. But last weekend I got called in sorry, by the homie Damian Lemon. He was headlining at Caroline's last weekend. He called me down to do some guest spots. That was super fun. I was there. Nori Davis hosted, Hadia Robinson featured, and Damian closed it out. And it was great on a Saturday night, be down at Caroline's. It was awesome. Damian's one of my favorite comics. Just one of the future greats, I'd say Damian is. And it was that was just like a really black show, like a really black show in a mainstream room. Really fun, really fucking fun. So I had a great time being a part of that. And yeah, just been talking to some, just getting some podcasts, recording some episodes that I'm really excited to share, like this one right now. I'm going to do a couple today. I'm hoping to do some today. And I don't like to tell you, like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to get all these guests and shit. And then, like, I don't. So I just don't want to, I don't want to let you guys down. Quick thing. So in my apartment complex, there's not that many parking spaces, and sometimes you have to park on the street, and sometimes people will park in weird ways that they make spaces for themselves that they really shouldn't be doing. You know, if you see people park weird and make parking spaces, and if you were to do that, you'd probably get towed. And I just feel like if I did the shit that they did, I would probably get towed. So this is this past Monday. I'm walking to go to the gym to go work out or whatever. And there's this lady. She sees me. I see her. And she says, and it's a car like parked parallel in front of her. And she's like, are these one of your cars? I was like, no. I was like, yeah, people do that all the time. She was afraid she couldn't get out. But I told her, I was like, look, you can get out. You just need to cut your wheels to the right and pull out. You'll be fine. And I was like, you were gonna kill me, weren't you? And she was like, I said, you were gonna kill me if one of those were my cars, weren't you? And she was like, I mean, I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah. I was like, but you'll be all right though. So that was funny. I don't know why. Fuck it. Yeah, I did say I will talk about that on the podcast. But yeah, people are. She's really upset. RIP Vine, right? God, Vine, Twitter's getting rid of Vine. That sucks. That's just like Vine. I never had a Vine account, but my God, it brought me so many laughs. And now people are sharing their favorite Vines. And that's gonna be really sad to see that go, because like you could be having a shitty day. And you look at your phone, you look at your Twitter or whatever, and you see like really funny vines that make you laugh, or you know, NBA is going on. Like NBA, I'm so happy that the NBA is back. I fell asleep on the Cavs and the Cavs and the Knicks. It was fun though. I'm glad to see the Cavs doing well, and it looks like Kyrie's got like uber confidence. Like they won last night. He hit a game winning shot last night against the Raptors. Kevin Love's playing with more verve, more confidence and shit, you know what I'm saying? So they're doing their thing, and so I'm excited that the season's back. And that's a good thing too. RIP Vine. And on a more somber note, I had to acknowledge the passing of one of my grad school professors, Jane Alderman, who was a Chicago casting director and actress. She passed away last week. And I'm just going to read you guys something from this Express.com. I'm going to read you an obituary that I found. So I'll do this. Oh, she was British born. I didn't know that. Okay. Lives remembered. Jane Alderman, 1939 to 2016. They spelled 2106. Oh, shit. All right. Jane Alderman, over three decades, British born casting director Jane Alderman put hundreds of well-known Chicago actors as well as undiscovered talent on the big screen. During that time, she cast 62 movies, including Ferris Bueller's Day Off, The Color of Money, Midnight Run, and Backdraft, and was responsible for hiring the lineup in the hit TV show ER for more than 15 years and helped propel George Clooney to global stardom. Although she rarely took credit, Alderman made similar transformations in the lives of Flashdance star Jennifer Beals, whom she discovered at the Francis Parker School, Jeremy Piven, John Cusack, and many others. Also, not on this, Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau and Rudy. When the producers of the 1985 Steven Spielberg movie The Color Purple were looking to cast the role of Sophia, they contacted Alderman, who had lived in Chicago for more than 40 years, and she suggested Oprah Winfrey. I did not know that. My mother said to them, "You really should take a look at this daytime talk show host we have in town," said her son Jason. Despite having very little acting experience, Oprah won the role and has routinely spoken of how the film changed her life. Raised in New York after her father died in the Second World War and her mother remarried an American serviceman, Alderman arrived in Chicago in 1966, hoping to make it as a stage actress. She appeared in the Goodman Theater and Steppenwolf productions, including Curse of the Starving Class opposite John Malkovich and Glenn Headley. Her first movie role came in the 1970s, where she won a part in T.R. Baskin with Candace Bergen and James Caan, which was the first Hollywood feature to be filmed in Chicago. Roles in 9 other movies ensued, most recently with Alderman playing Vince Vaughn's mother in The Breakup. In 1980, in the midst of Screen Actors Guild strike and a recession, Alderman set up shop in her kitchen as Chicago's first movie and TV casting director. What else do we have here? To find talent, she would go to the city's theater district. She retired in 2009, but continued to teach acting at Act One and Roosevelt University. Prior to that, she had taught at DePaul's Theater School for 20 years. So I met her at Roosevelt University, and she was very sweet, very kind, very real, very honest. It just she's one of the people who was very influential in the way that I approach the business side of things, because she was the only one that was really there. She's really the only person to give me and my classmates like the bare bones knowledge that you needed to figure this thing out, to figure the business side of things out. And she's the one, like, I don't know if you listen to this podcast a lot and you listen to me talk to other artists, other comedians and actors and stuff, it's all like she'd helped develop my mindset insofar as like this: you can't really compare yourself to other actors, other comedians, other performers, because it's not your life. Like, it's their life, and you don't know what they did to get those jobs, and you just don't know, and you don't have any control over that. So all you have control over is yourself. And it's easier said than done, but that's always something that I come back to when I'm thinking about stuff, when I'm feeling sad or jealous or emotional. I always come back to that, and that always grounded me. And she gave me some opportunities, and she was just really sweet and very kind. So she's definitely going to be missed, and I would be remiss if I didn't say anything about her. Because she's one of the reasons, because it's a lot of people that I went to school with, that I know, that I started with, that are not doing this shit anymore, because it's fucking hard. Like, this life isn't easy at all, and you get told no more than you get told yes. And a lot of people you see on TV and on TV and film, they've gotten told no a lot of times. People are saying yes to them right now, but before then, like, they probably heard a lot of no's, and you go in expecting to get those no's, but you still do it, and a lot of people aren't built for it. Like, I just look at shit, I ain't even gonna go to that, but it's a lot of people that are really The game is hard, man. So she was one of those people that I'm glad to have had her in my life in my 20s, like in my early 20s, to just kind of set the tone for, to just help shape my mindset in a positive way. And she was just really kind and really sweet. So she's definitely going to be missed. And she was a sweetheart. Where else do I want to go? I think, guys, that's it for me. And I want to bring you guys to Megan Gailey. Megan is a really funny comic. She was on MTV's Ladylike, Adam Devine's House Party, Conan, and she's very funny. She's a comic on the rise, and just really, I was glad to get to talk to her. And it was a long time coming. It was one where we were trying to set up dates, and she's one of those elusive guests. And when I got her, I was like, yes, we're gonna do this, and we made it happen. She was just a good hang, and I definitely want to come back to the show. I don't know why I'm sounding like it's early. All right, guys, it's early in the morning. And I'm doing this thing. Just deal with it. Just deal with my flaws as a podcast host, and just know. Just trust me. Just trust me. I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna get you through your TPS reports. I'm gonna get you through your workout. I'm gonna get you through your laundry. I've been doing this shit for almost 4 years. Okay, yeah. Just trust me. She's a terrific comic, and if you're not familiar with her, she's on YouTube, and follow her on Twitter and Instagram. She was just fucking delightful. And so without further ado, this is me and my conversation with Megan Gailey. So do you have a lot of trouble sleeping? Is that?
Well, I don't have my dad tells me it's because I have a guilty conscience, and I don't like that because I don't think that's what it is. But I definitely wake up early every morning, no matter what.
Oh, just like Kevin Hart.
Is that what Kevin Hart does?
Well, he said that on The Breakfast Club. And when he said, I get up every morning at 4:45. And I was thinking, I said, I do too, but it's just to go to a job that I don't like.
Yeah, and I do too, but it's mostly because I was drunk the night before. And my body's why are you in your clothes still?
But I've heard that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I guess we're like Kevin Hart, but we're different, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've heard that before, that term, just maybe in another way. Like your issues, your problems keep you up, or your demons keep you up at night.
Yeah.
And I think
that's how it's happening.
You don't think that's what you're just bad. What is it, circadian rhythms or something?
I don't know. I got this sleep mask, and then everything really turned around, and I was like, this is it. This is what I needed. And then I lost the sleep mask at a TGI Fridays at the Tulsa airport.
Oh.
And so then I got a new sleep mask, and it came yesterday. So I'm hopeful that this will be – I also take melatonin. I'm trying. I'm doing all the, bullet point white lady things to try and sleep better.
Yeah, I mean, I might need to do some of those white lady things.
Yeah, get some melatonin.
What does that do? I'm ignorant of that.
It is a natural sleep aid. It's apparently what your brain releases to tell you you are sleepy.
Uh-huh.
So it's already in our bodies, and this revs it up. But then someone was telling me that they've really never done any studies on it, and they fear that it might be terrible for you.
So you're just trying, you're just kind of like my mom in the way, you hear something on it. Well, they say, mom? Who's saying this?
I'm throwing caution to the wind. It's also I'm doing enough bad things that I don't think melatonin is going to be my downfall.
Bad things like what?
Oh, I love processed meats,
mm-hmm,
and cheeses and vodka. That's probably more of an issue than a melatonin.
I feel like
consumption.
That's, I feel the same way. Before I called you, I just had the rest of these cookies I had from Insomnia Cookies last night.
Oh, Insomnia Cookies are so good.
Oh my God. They were, so I was doing, have you ever done Sweet at the Slipper Room?
No.
Seth Herzog has this show. So it's right in the Lower East Side, and it's really, really cool venue and everything. And I said, oh my God, there's this Insomnia Cookies. I'm going to go there. And I went, and I said, oh, let me just get four cookies. You know, I'll have a couple, you know, tonight. You know, and then
let me just get four cookies is still a lot, Chris.
Really?
I think so.
I'm not going to eat them all at one time.
Uh-huh. No. Have you ever been to Insomnia before?
I have been. Actually, the reason, this is like really fat. Like this is what I would call fat boy reconnaissance. Uh-huh. So my friends are in I have some friends that are in this band, and they performed at the Slipper Room maybe a month ago. So I went to go see them. I was like, oh, Insomnia Cookies. I'll go. And I got like two cookies. So I was like, all right, cool, I'm going to do that. And then when I got booked on this show, I was like, I know I'm going to Insomnia Cookies. I want to have a good set, but I know that I'm going to Insomnia Cookies after.
You did the show for the cookies.
Exactly. I said, oh, it's near Insomnia Cookies. So
you did it all for the cookie. Isn't that a Limp Bizkit song?
All for the nookie. Same thing. They'll get it.
The cookies.
I got that reference.
I'm an idiot. That must be a Weird Al song.
No. If he did his cover.
He must have done, I did it all for the cookies. That seems like a Weird Al, like, flagship piece.
Or a Cookie Monster cover.
Yeah, I love Cookie Monster. So you get the cookies.
So I get the cookies. So I'm done with my, have a good set, have a good time. And so I'm going to Insomnia Cookies. So I was like, oh, let me get, you know, because I want to have it last for a couple days. So yeah. I said, let me get four cookies. And then she said, she said 7:48 or whatever. And I was like, Jesus Christ, like this isn't Mrs. Fields. Yeah, that's a lot of money. And this isn't Mrs. Fields where, you know, you're at a mall somewhere and you get your, you know, you get your cookies. Maybe it's five or six. You know, it's not as much as that.
This isn't a designer cookie.
Right. This is New York City.
This is at Magnolia Bakery.
Exactly. So she said, this is seven, whatever. I said, damn. And then I look at the board. And they have 12 for 12. So you could get 12 cookies for $12. I said, I'm not doing that. But then they had six for, and so if I got two more, it would be $9. I said, okay, I'll do this. And then I had three of them on the way home while I was driving.
Oh, and, they're so good.
And, but you know what? They even taste better when they're not as hot. Like the next day, like I ate the
really?
Last. Yeah. It tastes like a good, like if you made like Nestle, you know, those break and bake Nestle Toll House. And they're good. They're good when you first cook them, but then they taste even better. So I was impressed by that.
So you had them last night when they were warm though?
I had a couple last night and they were good. And then I came home and I was like, oh, they were sitting on the table. I was like, let me just kill these.
We had an Insomnia Cookies in the town where I went to college that would deliver.
They do that in New York City too. I've never.
And it was amazing.
Yeah, it's they're fantastic.
It's clearly a business that was born out of someone being high. Like
probably.
The model is like, have cookies whenever you want, and like we'll bring them to you too. You know, like it's like, what is really happening here? And everyone that works there, it feels like a dispensary.
It's true. It's amazing. But that's something that I don't do all the time. And I just remember a lot. I don't know. There seems to be like in the malls that I've been to, well, within the last 5 years, there's not any Mrs. Fields anymore.
I think that's like I think that was sort of a luxury that fell by the wayside when the economy tanked. Like I truly
think
that like cookies became like, you know, when there's like people talk about like when the economy like goes to shit, people still like women will still buy lipstick no matter what.
Okay.
I think like cookies, people are like, I can't afford it right now.
Well, they really are expensive. I remember just a thing I used to take my mom to the mall when I was back home, when I was in college and everything. We'd go to the mall, like Tyson's Corner in McLean, Virginia. That was a big mall in the area. And, you know, my mom would go, she would, you know, look at shoes. She'd go to Nordstrom. I'd go to Walden Books, or I'd go to a video game store. You know, we walk
around.
Sam Goody. we walk around. And then, you know, she would go to Cinnabon, and I would go to Mrs. Field. And that was our thing. And then I looked like maybe the last, since I've been back east for almost 10 years, and I remember maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, there used to be this Mrs. Fields in the Garden State Plaza Mall, which is near me. It's not there anymore. And the only one that I've been to is like in the subway station right by Radio City.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
It's really weird. So I don't know what's happened.
I don't know. I think it also the way like mall food, like I love a food court. I go nuts. I'm from Indiana. So it's like a food court to me is like
Narnia,
high class heaven. And they have changed. My parents live by like a really, really fancy mall.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that's in there is different. Like there is, it feels like that there's a dying breed of like the Orange Julius's,
yes,
and the Charlie Steakeries.
Yeah.
Because like I think people know it's like bad for you. And I'm like, no. Give me that weird Chinese meat on a stick to sample.
Right.
Like I will eat up and down the samples of a food court. And I think America has changed and I don't think that's happening anymore. And it makes me sad.
It makes me sad too, because it's a part of, I don't know, it's something, it's definitely nostalgia. And,
yes.
And it's definitely something tied to childhood. You know, where people, I know as comics, as artists or whatever, you kind of, I guess sometimes we focus on negativity but I don't know. It's part of, I miss that. Like I was in the old mall that I used to go to doing some shop. I had, the last time I was home, I forgot my underwear. So I went,
and you're like, how am I a grown-up?
I know. Like, I was like, you're 36. Like, what the
for
fuck?
For me, that's like, I honestly, it has to be the first thing I put into my suitcase or else I will forget it.
Yeah, like, it was so, I never do
to
that.
Go in first or mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, I never have a toothbrush or a thong uh-huh. when I need it.
So I was at the mall, the old mall in the neighborhood, the hood mall. Where like okay. now all they have is sneakers and like spray on, like spray paint shirts, whatever. What do you call those? Like the airbrush shirts and all that stuff. And it brought back these memories. And there was a cookie place that was there, and they were amazing. I got like these four like little cookies, and it was like $3 or however much it was. And they were so good, they were amazing,
damn.
And it just brought back that nostalgia. And I did this show in Rotterdam, New York, which is in the capital region, like Albany, Schenectady. Mm-hmm. And there was this mall that looked just like, it was just like an 80s mall.
Wow.
And they had like, I think it was an FYE, which is the equivalent of a Sam Goody or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just like, man, this is really cool. They had a movie theater in there. And
a hot topic
or like a Spencer's.
Yeah.
And you don't see that anymore. And
no.
it was kind of sad because it was almost like it was a Fallout type place too. And I had to do this.
Were there people there?
There were people there. It was okay. kind of sparse, and they had this random, what was one of the restaurants you mentioned? Like a sit down restaurant, you said?
Oh, I mean, a Friday's, a Chili's, an Applebee's.
No, it's not. It's not even
Red Robin.
No, it's like a restaurant that would only be like germane to the region. It's not even like a national chain. But I'll try to look it up. But you made me think about this, and it was just like a random restaurant that you wouldn't even think existed unless it was in a sitcom.
Yeah.
Like, let's go to like Davey's Steakhouse, and it just looked weird. And
a Logan's Roadhouse,
something like that. I'm on the website. I hope I can find. See, this is how I do it. If you make me think of something, I'm relentless about finding
or
it.
You can't rest.
Or then I'll go ahead.
I will let myself like rest with it, so then it can come to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that like feels so satisfying when you're like, oh my God, I like thought of David the Gnome on my own. It'll, you know, like I love having that epiphany moment of like, yes.
I think we miss that now. Pete Holmes has a great joke about that on his first album, where he talks about like, if you want to know the name, where a certain artist is from, you would have to ask all these people, and you would argue about it, and then you would, you know, and until you figured it out, And now it's just like you're looking it up.
Now it's at your fingertips.
Yeah. The restaurant's called 99.
What the fuck? Oh my
I don't know what. It was just really sad. And it just.
99?
Yeah.
So weird.
It was. I've never heard of that place before. 99 Restaurant and Pub.
No. I do. I mean, I think the only thing that's even relatively similar to this is sort of an airport now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You'll see. When I am always like, is Wolfgang Puck, like, proud? Like, what? I know he was a chef.
Yeah.
So it's like at some point he had some level of prestige. Mm-hmm. But, like, all it is now is, like, Caesar salads at LaGuardia. And I'm like, does he feel good about this?
He's making money, probably. He probably doesn't even care.
But, like, you know, Emeril sold out a little bit, but he's still, like, a chef. Mm. I don't know. But I do like airport. I love an airport restaurant. Where did I eat? I ate at like a nasty place like 3 days ago. Like sat down and ate, and they gave me, what did I have? It was not good. They gave me like a real fork, like a silverware fork, and then a plastic knife. And I was like, who was in charge of this decision? Like,
wow.
Did they run out of knives, or were they like workshopping using plastic? Like, it just, she set it down and I didn't notice it. And then after like a minute or two, I was like, what the?
Did this bitch just give me?
Why did she give me a plastic fork?
I remember being in Minneapolis on a layover and having a pretty good meal. I can't think of the name. I think it was like a satellite restaurant. Based on a chain in their downtown area. I don't even remember what it was, but I remember it being pretty good.
Well, that's when you get excited. A lot of Southern places will do that. Like I feel like in Houston and in Dallas, it's all the like Tex-Mex restaurants that are out in the city, and then they put them in the airport. But then if you talk to like locals, they're like, that's not the real thing. And it's like, yeah, obviously. But my favorite restaurant in Indianapolis has a restaurant version of itself in the airport.
What is it called?
It's called Shapiro's. It's a Jewish delicatessen.
Okay.
And there's one downtown. And then there's actually that fancy mall that I was talking about by my parents. There's one in there, but it's like, it's set aside from the food court. Like it's not, it's like never mingle with the commoner food court.
They're elitist. Yeah.
Yes. But it's like less than a restaurant. In the mall, and then they have a place. They have two in the Indianapolis airport. And every time my mom flies, she goes and she gets a Reuben, and she takes half to whoever she's flying to go see.
Oh, that's cool. And they appreciate that too, right?
Of course,
they look forward to her coming. Just like, you can leave the sandwich. They just want the sandwich.
And she'll get it at like 7 a.m. Like she does, she's like, sometimes I'm there and the gate's not even open. And then I will like yell through the thing, can I get a sandwich yet? And they're like, 5 minutes. Like she is like, she will not fly unless she gets this sandwich.
So it's that good, huh?
I think she's just like, I'm at the airport. I love it. When I was 12, there was like there. And I don't know. I hesitate to even tell this story. There may or may not have been a man watching me pee through a ceiling tile in the bathroom.
Oh,
and
my
like,
God.
I have never hesitated for a second to like go back there. You know, I'm like, that's still the best restaurant.
That's how you know it's good. Like that's how you know if you risk your safety or ridicule. Yeah.
My mom told on him, and they were like, oh my God, you know, like it was like remedied. It wasn't like they were just like,
Okay,
that's what happens here. But I'm like, you know, it's good. I don't care.
Well, at least they stepped up to the plate. Like your mom said something and they probably got rid of the guy.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, there's this, I think I told the story before on another podcast, but there was, in my undergrad, we were in Emmitsburg, Maryland, which is 80 miles outside of the Maryland, D.C. area. And it was pretty much rural, like 15 minutes south of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. There's a have you ever heard of Sheetz?
No.
Okay, it's kind of like Wawa. It's like Wawa.
It's
like that equivalent. You made to order sandwiches, good. And then when you're in college and you know you're hungry, it's open 24 hours.
A thrill.
Yeah, it's like amazing. And so you know if somebody went to Sheetz and didn't tell anybody, they, you know, your friends would be pissed at you. You went to Sheetz?
Yeah.
You didn't fucking tell me? The area where it was in, Thurmont, Maryland, is known to be Klan country.
And, oh, no.
Yeah, and it was like this incident where this kid got beat up, and it was a black kid, and it was like really fucked up. And, but those sandwiches are really fucking good. And they're so good, and like sometimes you walk in there, and the person making your sandwich might not want you being in. Like, it looks like they might not like you, but they have so much dignity in their sandwich making that they're still going to make you a great fucking sandwich. And you just eat it because it's good, you know?
Isn't that the Klan shouldn't get to have any corner on any food item.
Yeah.
And you know?
Right.
They should have poopy, like, runny soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They shouldn't get to have insomnia cookies.
Right.
Nothing.
You know, but we're on. Yeah. You led me down this thread of like of food and stuff. But that would be my issue. Like, food is probably, and I've been a little better with it. But I remember seeing people like do cocaine, and I was like, I don't want any. It's not like, and then it wasn't like, yeah, this is my, I'm theater is my anti-drug, guys. You know, I wasn't casting judgment on anybody, but I was like, damn, like if instead of cocaine, if that was like a table full of sliders, there might be a problem.
Well, and the thing is, cocaine makes you not eat. So it's like, ew.
Yeah.
Go away. I want to eat.
Yeah. So I can't have you on the show without getting one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because it's been long overdue, and I'm so happy
it's
to
been
have
so
you.
Long.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you on. One of the first times we really started talking was when we were at the Accidental Comedy Festival last year, mm-hmm. 2015, and we were just talking and catching up, and we just kind of were off almost like in the middle of Mayhalls just talking about sports. And you were like, I had never, it's only been a handful of women that I've known in my life that was just like, well, we need this offensive line. We need the protection, the secondary. We need this, blah, blah, blah. Where are you at right now? How are you feeling about your Colts? How do you feel about
it? I am in a dark place. It is.
I'm sorry to laugh, but
it's so bleak. Mm-hmm. I went to, luckily the first two games of the season, I was on a 5-hour flight for the first one, so I couldn't see any of it. This mm-hmm. is the Detroit game.
Okay.
Which they lost at home. They gave up like 39 points. And I guess they like staged a comeback, blah, 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 blah. But everyone's like, you should be glad you missed it. The second game, the Denver game, I was in the mountains in California. So I was like able to listen to some of it on the radio, but then it would like go in and out. Like, I definitely felt like I was in 1980.
Okay.
And at this point, I'm like, how am I not seeing anything? So then the third game of the season I went to, I was back in Indianapolis for a wedding. And so this is the game they won. They beat San Diego. And like T.Y. caught like a game clinching touchdown with like a minute 20 left. It was right in front of us. The state, I have been to two AFC championship games.
Wow.
And the stadium celebrated in a way bigger than when it was decided we were going to the Super Bowl. Like, to go 1-2, this place was losing its mind. So I'm like, this is a bad sign. Like, if we feel this good about beating San Diego at home, like, we're in for some trouble. And then the Jacksonville game happened. And I mean, it's just been nightmare after nightmare. On Sunday, I was in D.C. visiting my brother, and I stayed until Monday so we could watch the game together.
Ooh.
And so we like, you know, it was kind of like a nice game to sort of be zoned out because we were playing so well and winning the whole time. So like, he was doing work, I was doing work. And then it's sort of like when they scored that first touchdown with 3 minutes left, it was like, we're going to mess it up, but like, we're fine. And then when they tied the game, it was like, oh, this is not like, there was not even a shred of me that was like, we can win this game in overtime. Like, it's gotten so bad that I'm like, we are losers, I think.
What do you think the issues are? Because Andrew Luck's back. Is he really 100%?
when you look at how much he gets hit, it's mm-hmm. hard to believe he is. Like, obviously he's big and athletic, but like he gets hit, even not sacks, just like whacked
right.
constantly. So it's like, I know there's wear and tear on him. I don't think he's 100%, but I don't think any quarterback is probably 100% game, you know, week seven or whatever. I think they're a little wobbly.
Sure.
He is a problem. And the thing is, he knows he's a problem. Like, it's hard to be mad at this team because they're all saying like, this is on me. Like, if you read any of the stuff, Pagano thinks it's on him. Luck thinks it's on him. T.Y. is like, I'm not making plays. I'm sure Frank Gore is like, I'm 1,000 and I wish I wasn't. Like,
he did break a record, though. Didn't he break a rushing record?
I think now he's in like 9th place overall.
Oh, that's but amazing.
He on Sunday had a 100-yard game, and it was the first time since like 2013 for the Colts. Like,
wow.
That is terrible. I think the problem is, I mean, I really do not like the GM, Ryan Grigson, and he came out like a week ago and was like, yeah, I mean, I can't fix the rest of the team because of Luck's contract. And it's like, do you know how dumb that sounds? Like, that's your job.
Yeah.
Your job is to make sure contracts work so you can fix the team.
Did they like, not get it? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I could understand Pagano saying that, but like, you are the one who drove this deal. So like, you're criticizing your own deal making skills here.
Right. Weren't we talking one time and you didn't feel confident in the O-line?
Oh, well, at least now they know that that's a problem and they're trying. It's like, it's young. Mm-hmm. So they drafted this kid, Ryan Kelly, out of Alabama. He's a rookie. He's great, but he's a rookie. So it's like, yeah, he's not going to be Jeff Saturday overnight. But they have the talent there, but it just, they don't have, I don't feel like a veteran or two veterans that are good enough to be like, okay, you guys are young, but like, come with us. It's everybody learning on the fly. I mean, even on Sunday, there were like 3 players that caught passes that my brother and I were like, who? Like, there's so many injuries, and also a lot of it is, yeah, Luck has a $140 million deal, so we got to find these undrafted free agents,
these diamonds in the rough,
plug them in.
Right.
Yeah. So I think there's so many. I think the defense is actually not that bad. Like, when I watch them, I'm like, yeah, they miss tackles, but like, I think they're like 31st in the league. They don't feel that bad.
Right.
But yards wise, they are. They give up huge. The worst running back in the league could get 8 yards a carry. Like, they're not good at, but then they're really, you know, they have strip sacks. Like, Mathis is still a beast. Vontae Davis is an amazing corner. Like, they have people on the team that are good. Mike Adams is great. Like, it's just something, and I don't know if they just feel complacent. I don't know if Pagano is like too kind, but the thing is, it's like he just got like a 4-year deal, so he's there, so like this is what it is. And Gregson got an extension too, so I don't think they can fire them and then get someone better for the money they'd have to spend to be paying 2 coaches.
Do you feel like I thought about you a couple weeks ago when I'm watching, maybe it's a Sunday night game, and I saw Dwight Freeney sack somebody
on the Patriots.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Like, he's still in the league?
It hurts me to my deepest core that he is. I think he feels terrible. I do not think he wants to be on the Patriots, but he was on the Cardinals last year and had an amazing year. Did you watch All or Nothing?
No. Is that the Amazon Prime thing?
Yes.
Is it worth it?
It's so good. I recommend it to you and all your listeners.
Okay.
I loved it. I mean, I think it would be more difficult to watch now because the Cardinals are kind of
He's with the Falcons now.
He's with the Falcons now?
Yeah, well, according to the wiki.
He was on the Patriots like weeks ago.
Let's see. Dwight Freeney is an American football defensive end for the Atlanta Falcons of the National Football League.
That's so weird. It's, I mean, at this point, like, since the Colts, he went to San Diego and was, like, pretty good but got hurt, mm-hmm. which was kind of an issue he had a little bit in Indy towards the end.
Yeah.
But then in Arizona, he was amazing last year. Like, there's, like, whole episodes of All or Nothing dedicated to him where I cry seven. There's one episode I cried seven times because he, like, makes everyone jerk chicken. I mean, I just love him so much.
You know,
but
he's
floating now. He's kind of, like, going all over the place.
But it's, like, it just seems like he still had – there was still gas in the tank.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they did – like, that's the same thing happened to DeMarcus Ware, and God bless him, he got a Super Bowl last year. You know, but
no, Dwight still when he wasn't on the Cardinals, I was like, what the? But I think it's because he played so well last year.
Mm-hmm.
There was one game where they like say he made $300,000 in a game in incentives.
Wow.
So like you have to pay. He's what, like a 12-year veteran? Maybe
he's 36. More? He's the same age as me.
So he's a 14-year veteran. So you have to pay him a certain amount. And then and I think the Cardinals were like, oh, you can't really afford to pay him that. Like,
yeah.
he's almost outplaying his status.
Do you feel like that's something that's missing in a locker room? Like, okay, so let me ask you this, because you bring up a great point and you're making me think about this. So what's worth more? You're spending less money. Okay, so the money that you could have paid Dwight Freeney, you can pay maybe two or three other guys. Mm-hmm. But what about that leadership in the locker room?
Well, but I think that's why he still has a job.
Mm-hmm.
Is because there's teams that are like, yeah, we still want that. It's like Jerome Bettis played till he was 1,000. You know, like these guys that do bring, like in the Amazon series, they were like, yeah, he's older, but like it's like having another defensive line coach. Like,
yeah,
he has so much knowledge. He will probably go on to be a head coach if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, you're having to pay him more, but you are getting someone to mentor and teach younger guys from a Hall of Famer.
You sound like
he's a Hall of Famer. My dad doesn't.
Oh yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't be.
I think he is.
He's got a ring. He's a Pro Bowler. How many?
He was like a 7-8-time Pro Bowler.
Seven-time
Pro Bowler.
My dog
is named after him. Oh my God, I nailed it.
Yeah.
Well, my dog, bless me. My dog is named Blake Freeney.
Oh, he is?
His name's Freeney. And it's really, yeah, when he was on the Chargers, my dad was like, we have to change the dog's name. I'm like, he's like 7 years old. We can't change his name now.
So once the guy leaves, do you just like, fuck that guy? Or your dad is?
No. He just was like, I don't want to have a dog who's named after Philip Rivers' teammate.
Yeah, that's another franchise that I just can't like wrap my brain around.
I know.
It's just so weird.
I think they might leave.
Yeah. You think he might go somewhere? Where is he going to go? Where do you think?
I think the whole team might leave.
Okay. Okay. I thought you meant like him and his 15.
No.
Kids.
Yeah. No. No. It's they can't move. There's not a house in America that could accommodate them. But I think the team. I was in San Diego like a few weeks ago, so I was like, you know, I want to know all the Chargers gossip. Keep your enemies close, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were saying that there is like a proposal now for a new stadium, but the city would have to put like a couple hundred million. Mm-hmm. And I think the city's like, we don't really want to do that. And if they don't get a new stadium, then they're going to go to Vegas.
Okay.
Or they might come to LA.
Two teams in LA?
Yeah, which is so weird.
Yeah,
It's all. I think Jacksonville is eventually going to be in London.
Oh my God!
I think that is where that is. It just seems like because everyone's like, why don't they move Jacksonville? Why don't they? And I think Jacksonville is like so bleak ticket sales wise.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit better now because of
they're winning Gabbert. A little bit. No, they're 2-3.
I think that, yeah, I mean, they're doing better in the AFC South than the Colts. I think they may eventually move to London. I think that's what Goodell wants, is a team in London by like 2019 or something.
Ugh.
I know.
Games that nobody's going to watch.
I know. 6 a.m. And, like, when the Colts played over there, I was like, I have to get up at 6 a.m. to watch them lose to Jacksonville.
Well, what do you? How do you feel about Andrew Luck? So this is year four for him now.
This is five.
Five. Okay,
because he missed most of last year.
Okay.
So it, like, I mean, I, it's this thing where it's like flashes of greatness and, you know, like 13 fourth quarter comebacks. I do think he is great, but he, it's like, you've been in the league long enough now that, like, why are you still making some of these mistakes? I think he tries to do too much.
Yeah, because he's not Ryan Tannehill. He's not like some guy that they're waiting for. Like, I listen
to. No, there's no one better that we could have.
Yeah, because I listen to Dan Le Batard a lot, and they're in their local hour. They'll talk about, I just don't know if he's got it or not. And then the people that cover that team, and it just, they give certain guys so many chances that it's like, and they're just so mediocre. I don't know.
I think that's a huge problem. Like, when you look at the deal Brock Osweiler got, you're like, what?
Right.
That's why it's like, okay, there's Rodgers. There's Brady, you know, and then you're kind of like, well, and there's
Philip Rivers,
I think Luck is still, even with the struggles and with the sacks, and he's still having a good year. I mean, I have him on a fantasy team. He scores 35 points a game. Like, he's still a top five quarterback. He's the highest paid quarterback in the league. And it's not a Cutler thing where they're like, let's pay him and like hope it works out.
Yeah.
If lo and behold, for some reason, the Colts were like, we don't want him anymore. He's gone. Teams would kill their quarterback in front of their children to get him. Like,
sure.
He is desired. Right. He just is on a team that, I mean, who does he have to throw to? T.Y.?
Is he?
Dwayne Allen is not a great tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Gore is doing so much with so little because there is literally no protection for him. So if there was even like half of an offensive line, we wouldn't be having any of this trouble, I don't think.
Yeah. Cause for Frank Gore to be 33 and to still be playing as well as he is, like that's pretty amazing. Like, I think
I know.
He and I were both in college around the same time. I remember him. I remember using him on the NCAA video game, and now he's, you know, yeah. It's because for a running back, you know, the
that's long.
That's a long time. It's
a
like,
long time, and still a starter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no. I mean, there is no one like biting at his heels to take that job.
Yeah. And he's like he's a straightforward runner. He's not really a slasher. He's just like
he's a man.
He's a man.
He's a beat. Like, he's just a run down your throat. Yeah, it's not a lot of fluff. I mean, once a week I'll go, where is Trent Richardson? What happened?
He's a bust. I don't even think he's in the league anymore.
I mean, that is like
people hate him. Like, it seems like, I mean, just fuck that guy.
I don't think he's a bad dude. I definitely heard that he maybe like couldn't read, like that there were like, when he came to Indy and the first, he came like mid-season, uh-huh. And everyone was like, oh my God, this is great. And I'm like, no. If the Cleveland Browns are willing to give something up, then it is not good. That is not a present we want. And then he didn't have a great year. And everyone was like, well, these were the rumors I heard. Everyone was like, well, he couldn't learn the playbook because he's like not smart. So they were like, year two, he's going to be incredible. He just needed time to like osmosis everything in.
Mm-hmm.
And then year two, he was worse.
2,032 rushing yards, 3.3.
I don't think he's like a bad dude. I'd never heard he was a bad dude.
It just seems like there's so much, like there's animosity towards him. Yeah. I just remember some ESPN piece where like, we hate you, Trent.
That's a sad story.
He was on the practice squad for the Ravens this year.
Oh, my God. That's so bad.
Yeah.
He was like the number two pick.
Pick number three in 2012. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to get your perspective on some other stuff with football. How do you feel about, you know, the touchdown celebrations? How do you feel about, because I don't think, I haven't talked to anybody about football this year. So you'd be a good person to talk to. Odell Beckham.
To me, the NFL is so off base with the things that they think are distasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have never seen any sort of celebration, even from, like, an opposing team that I'm like, well, that shouldn't have happened. Like, it does. I do not care whatsoever. These are, like, fun, talented, cool men that can do backflips. I want to see a fucking backflip. You know, like, I remember Marcus Pollard, this tight end for the Colts in like the late 90s, would dunk through the upright. It would, because he played basketball in college. I'm like, yes, I want to see people dunking through the upright. Like, give me T.O. stealing pom poms and dancing.
Right.
And like, why don't you address, I don't know, maybe that like mental health is an issue. Like, they're like a school that is like punishing kids for chewing gum, but then has like a violence problem.
Yeah, it's so crazy because I think Josh Norman recently got fined for doing the bow and arrow pose and then he got fined but it's okay that he's on a team that's now deemed a racial slur. Like everybody says it's wrong. The people who it's supposed to depict, they don't like it, and they just continue to, you know, double and triple down on that. But, oh, you can't pretend to make a sign because it's too violent.
Right.
And it's just...
I mean, it's truly, like, there have been... I guess there was a moment, like, a few years ago when I truly was like, I don't know if I can be a fan of this league anymore because it just got so... bad. And then it's like, you know, I'm a bad feminist because I'm like, well, but I love it and I love my dad and I like that we talk about, you know, like
right.
there are so many things that I like when I'm at the gate, like I do love the camaraderie of it and mm-hmm. like it brings my family together. I think the Colts from top to bottom actually do have like a lot of good men on it. I think we're probably a shining example of like, and is that me being naive about my own like hometown? Of course, I'm sure there's like pieces of shit, but I'm like, no, they're nice boys. But it's like, once a year, there's like something that I'm like, I vote boycotting the entire month of October.
You think about it or you?
I thought about it. I didn't do it. And I was like, I'm going to write this whole piece about, because I find their breast cancer, like, platform to be so condescending mm-hmm. and awful. Like it's to raise awareness for, we are aware breast cancer exists. Like, and I'm saying that as someone who, my grandmother died of breast cancer. Like I am not I have breasts. Like I am not insensitive to the fact that it is a disease that kills thousands and millions of women every year. It mm-hmm. obviously needs research and money, but like, the NFL has a platform to say, hey, instead of selling pink merchandise, why don't we attack domestic violence?
Right.
Why don't we have a whole month where we talk about mental health and women's rights? Like, and instead they want to say they're pro women. So they take the easiest way out.
That's true. It's very true. I mean, it's something that it's a turnoff because the way that mm-hmm. they, you know, and I'm the same guy that'll have Red Zone on all day and mm-hmm. I'll fall asleep to the Sunday night game. And it takes something out of it that these guys who work so hard since they were kids, it's an emotional game and you can't show emotion after scoring a touchdown. You want to see somebody sell. You want to see somebody have that visceral reaction where like, oh my God, I didn't know my dad when I was a kid or my mother was on drugs and I still became this person that's good at this job that only a small percentage of people are able to do, to physically do. And I scored. And I get penalized when I show him up. Like Odell Beckham, like his performance last weekend, this past week was amazing. And so he takes his helmet off, like on the sidelines, and oh, he's, you know, you get penalized for it.
Yeah.
And then you have, go ahead.
It's not even in, like, in-game celebrations isn't even in the top 100 things that the NFL needs to be focused on.
Right.
It's just, they're just so out of touch. I feel like they are so confused as to, like, what needs to be happening. And it's kind of weird because, like, they're so out of touch, yet everyone consumes it. Like,
yeah, everybody.
Truly, the ground is falling out from underneath them between this concussions thing. You know, like, at some point, it'll hit a tipping point, and it'll be like, well, it can't exist in this way. Yet the NBA seems so in touch and, like, does cool things and has, like, the least amount of fans. And it's like, what?
You know what it is? I feel like it's so much, maybe like this, it's so corporate, and they've been calling it the No Fun League for so long, but it seems like there's just so many corporate entities tied into the NFL, and you know, you go to a Super Bowl and you really, fans can't really go to the game if they want to.
I went to a Super Bowl. I went to the
Which
second Giants Patriots one, the one that was in Indianapolis.
How was
it? It was great.
What was, but I mean, how did you feel? Because you're somebody that, just not even as a woman, just as a person, you love the game. You love sports. Mm-hmm. It just did it seem okay? For an example,
It was a letdown.
Okay, like, see, that's okay.
It event wise, it is so cool.
Like, you could say, like, I was at the Super Bowl.
It's just, it's a cool energy, but like, sportsman wise, it's not like. And the AFC Championship game I went to, where the Colts beat the Patriots to the in 2000, and I guess it was 5, and then they won the Super Bowl. 2006 or maybe
2007.
It was 2006.
I was living in Chicago. I remember that. Yeah.
So like that is like the greatest sporting event I've ever been to in my life.
Okay.
And this is just, the reason is, it's like, okay, so my dad was sitting down like with work people. So my mom and I are sitting in different seats, and the row in front of us was Canadian businessmen. They don't care.
Right.
You know, they like flew down on a private jet that was owned by the Miami Heat. It's like, what? Wow. How did that happen? And so like, they're like, they don't even have a fucking football team in Canada. You know, like, there's not even an NFL team there.
They have the Argonauts.
Yeah. And we sat next to some, cops, East Rutherford cops. Mm-hmm. And so like, they were great because like, they had driven overnight in a minivan, like left one of their son's birthday parties to come. And so it's like, that's cool.
Neglected their family.
Yeah. But like, no one else had like that much of a state. I mean, people were in suits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, Madonna was cool. The game was good. It was a good game.
Yeah.
There was a fight like two rows behind us, which everyone was like, that is insane. This is what I love about Indianapolis. It was, so the Giants fan obviously instigated it and was like being a drunk lunatic. Mm-hmm. And so then the Patriots fan sort of like, you know, shot back at them. And then like, the fight broke out. And so the security comes down and they're like, who started it? And everybody's like, the Patriots fan. And so the Patriots fan got thrown out.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Like, what a terrible day for him. His team loses and he gets thrown out, and he didn't really even do anything.
Now,
but we gotta protect our Mannings, you know?
Yeah. It's, I guess it's just, I mean, I think, cause the way that they're treating the league is this way and then that way, but we all participate and we're all a part of it. Like, these guys are tearing each other's heads off. I doubt that you would let your son play. You know,
I wouldn't. And like, my dad played football through college, and my brothers never played it down. Like, never. It was never even on. I mean, my mother is a nurse and my brothers are both like 5'9". So like, I don't think it was going to happen. But like, they're just like it. I mean, we had football in our town that I know all my guy friends played in middle school and high school, and my brothers never Pee-wee, nothing. Like, it was never even a thought in my parents' mind. I think my dad maybe would have wanted them to, because he had three brothers and they all played together, and, you know, like, they were like a football family.
Sure.
But it just wasn't ever going to happen.
I know my dad wanted me to play. I mean, I did Boys and Girls Club, and it just wasn't, I liked playing the games, but I didn't really care for practice, like Allen Iverson. Practice. Talking about practice. But it was something. I had two cousins that played in the league, Julian Peterson and Jason Brown. And they,
cool.
Yeah. Like, they were, I mean, you could, I remember seeing Jason. He played with the Ravens and then for the Rams. And at the time, like, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, he had it signed like a really big contract for an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. And he gave it all up to, like, raise potatoes in North Carolina to feed
people.
So he's
like a good dude.
Yeah, a really good dude. And I remember seeing him. This was like maybe the early 2000s. And he was playing for UNC, Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. And he's just a huge guy. I saw him at the family reunion. And he was blocking for, I was like, you're going to protect Ronald Curry? The quarterback was like, yeah. You know, yeah. He's just like, yep. I was like, yep. All right.
That's my quarterback.
Yep. So it was just like, you could see it. And I just didn't, I didn't have it. Like, no. I just wasn't mean enough. And then I thought I was going to be a running back. They put me on the D line. So I guess, where do I want to go from here? You know, one, I was pre-gaming for you, and I was watching a lot of your stuff on YouTube. And one thing that struck a chord with me was this bit that you had. I don't even know if you still do it, but it was about 5 years ago, where you're talking about being a kid and your Disney princess dress.
Oh yeah, I don't do that bit anymore, but my mom always tells me it's her favorite joke.
That's I really like that joke, because it's something that, like, I know, like, you talk about like, I don't know. It just seems like you talk about white people shit, and you, but you like it's a, you talk about,
it's like deep cut white people shit.
Yeah. You know? Like deep cut white people shit.
It's not like NASCAR. It's like Lily Pulitzer.
Well, it's interesting to me, because it's like you talk about it, and you're a part of that world too. It means like you shine a light on the darkness or the facade. It's almost like some of my favorite movies, like when I was like coming up, like maybe like when I was really starting to be a nerd about film and like movies, was like the American Beauty. That's more like of your mainstream movie. But I remember the tagline of that movie being, "Look closer." So like if you look beneath the veneer of the nice suburban home and the freshly clipped lawns, there's some darkness there. And there's some shit that's under the surface, and you're not afraid to talk about it. And you're not afraid.
Thank you.
You're not afraid to, you know, like, expose yourself or the inadequacies that you feel like you have or the people around you. And it was just something about that bit where it's like, it made me think, like, what kind of person who is an attractive white woman, you know, that's a white woman that comes from, I'm assuming, upper middle class. What makes that person want to get up in front of people and make them laugh? So this is a part of the show that's like origin story. Where is, as the nerd would say, where is, talk about planet Krypton, talk about, you know, that's a Superman reference. I don't know if you.
I know.
Okay. You're all right. You're well rounded.
I have brothers.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. So what is that like? What is Indiana, Midwest?
Really don't know. And like, there's so much that like you hear, you know, like our peers, they were such like comedy fans, or like they felt like they never like fit it. Like there's, I think, people bring a whole different like set of things. I feel like I had a very normal, happy childhood. I always knew I wanted to perform.
Sure.
I don't think I even knew that this was a job option.
Okay.
So like, to me, I was like, I'll be an actress. Like, that's what I'll do. I'll be a famous actress.
Right.
And then I think I sort of was like, well, that's not like, that's probably too far fetched. And like, I think I wrote a book in third grade for a project where I thought I was going to win Wimbledon. And then like the year later, I was like, well, that's obviously not going to happen. Like even very young, I was like, okay, we need to like reassess these dreams.
So you were self-aware even at that age, like yes, even eight, yeah, at 8 years old, like, I'm not going to
win Wimbledon. Come on. Yeah. And so I like knew maybe like, maybe it's not going to be acting. And then when I was in college, I really was like, I'm going to be a sports broadcaster. Like, that's what I was like, this is my calling. This is what I want to do. This is what I've been put on this planet for. And then as I like sort of worked in it and experienced it more and more, I was like, oh, this is not what it is.
And what were some of the things that turned you off?
The lack of creativity. Mm. That's the only thing. Okay. I worked with these like brilliant, cool people who were, I mean, have a cool job and a cool life, but like, to me, it felt a lot of like suppressing their personality and kind of just reciting. And obviously some of that has changed. I don't think that's how like ESPN necessarily is, but for like women, it kind of is. Like, we don't know these like girls that stand on the, like, what do we know about Pam Oliver? You know, we don't. Much. And like, yeah, she's obviously a talented, cool woman. But like, I don't know what her personality is like.
Yeah.
And so that was like very disheartening to me. And I think at that point I was like, oh my God, I have literally no idea what I'm going to do. This was like my dream and all my eggs were in this basket. And I even had people I admired being like, I don't think this is like a fit for you anymore. And then I just was like, I guess I'll try stand up. Like, I remember like having an epiphany, and like, this is like 6 months before I ever even did, more than that, like almost a year.
How old were you?
I was 22 when, okay, I like made this statement to my parents. I was like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. And they were like, that's great. We like believe you, you know? And so then I like didn't do it for like almost a year. Uh-huh. And then I finally did it. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been looking for.
So why did you feel like, why did you not like do it? Why did it take you a year?
Because I was still in college. Okay. And there wasn't a place at Purdue for me to do it. I would like host the mom's day brunch for my sorority. Mm-hmm. And I would have to like auction off like glass dolphins and weird shit. And so I definitely was like, if you ask, I'm like, that was like the first time I ever like performed as me, you know, I think. But
sure. What was that like? Did you take advantage of those? I'll never destroy like that again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. See, yeah, that's what I was wondering. I bet those were great shows. Great dolphin.
Yes.
It gave me such false confidence.
You know, like I was like, I know what I'm doing. Like I'm killing with these 50-year-old rich white women.
Sure. Yeah.
And so like when I did it for the first time, I mean, you've acted. It's like,
yeah,
we're more comfortable on stage. We have even if we're terrible, mm-hmm, we have a presence and like a comfortable feel about us.
Right.
And so when I first started, I did better than I deserved to, because I was just like, hey, I'm up here and I'm like totally fine.
Because it seems like with you, the first time I met you, it was at Caroline's. And I think it might have been 2014 or some within the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we were both doing this Purdue show. And I remember it was like a pretty sparse crowd. And Caroline's, if there's not that many people in there, it could be
not fun.
And I remember the host, I think you went on first after the host. And the host didn't do his job. Like he didn't do his job. And I see you get up there, you did his job, and you told, I was like, okay, this girl is the real deal. Like, I didn't know you from Adam. And like, you just took control over that crowd, and then it became a show, you know? And a lot of people can't do that. Like, a lot of people can't host. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Like, hosting
is.
It's fucking hard. Like, I've seen people, like, some of the best that I've seen, like, within our, like, class or our, you know, what our whatever the fuck you want to call it, but like Amber Nelson, Gordon Baker Bone, like those two people come to mind. And then mm-hmm. they bring you just are supposed to It's a fucking show. So when you got on the show on stage, it became, I was like, okay, now we have a show.
Mm-hmm.
And you, and that's why I was like, oh, that girl's good.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It, I mean, we like talk about this. I talk about this sometimes with people, because then it's like, once people know you can host, then you sort of get like trapped.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, you can host this. And it's like, I don't want to, like, because it is hard. And you're like, why am I, can't these other people that suck at it learn how to do it? But like, yeah. I mean, I came up in Chicago for the most part. I spent almost 6 years there.
Okay.
And like, we had to host there when we were starting out. And it also was like, most of the crowds and situations were like those ambush shows, or they were volatile. Like,
yeah,
there was so few shows where it was like, well, this is a good scenario. Like, yeah, everything was like a little combative. And so I think, and I almost feel like I've lost some of that by being in New York and LA, because you get a little coddled, where it's like, these people are like here to see the show and like listening. And so when that's, when you're not in an ideal situation, I'm like, oh my God, I hope I still have that tool to like, I used to only like, I used to only do well if it was like worst case scenario.
Really?
Like any audition showcase, I would just like, cause I like was like, wait, I know, I like, I didn't get to be as like aggressive as I wanted to be. So it was for me a lot of learning how to like bring all of the stuff that I liked about being on stage when people like didn't want to listen to me and I had to like grab them, and then still be able to do that even when people do want to listen. And I mean, most people don't want to listen to me, you know? So
well, I want to listen. And I think my listeners, my 17 listeners would love to listen. No,
17 is my lucky number.
Oh, wow. There's more than that. But I, you know, what you're speaking on right now, it's, I think maybe it's a bias that I have towards the Midwest and Chicago, mainly. I feel like Chicago, I had Clark Jones on the show recently, and we were talking about just,
that's my baby.
Yeah. We're talking about the work ethic, or you learn as an artist, speaking just cause that's the only way, that's the only thing that I know. But as an artist in Chicago, you learn your craft. Like, this is a constant theme that comes up with people that have, are from the Midwest or that have lived in Chicago. It's just a thing where you will learn how to do your craft, and if you do it well, you can take that anywhere. It's marketable anywhere. And it just, I don't know if it's just the whole, who, the city of big shoulders, who the fuck, I'm trying to sound like I'm smart on this fucking thing. And it's just like, I think it's Carl Sandburg, but yeah, and it's like, it's just like, it's just work. It's just constantly working on your craft and putting it out there. And I see like those clips of you from 6 years ago to you on Conan. There's obviously there's more experience in the Conan set, but what's also there in both of those places is just the ease, the comfort in the delivery system that just makes things work for you. And it just seems like there's a completeness there. Obviously you're going to evolve even more, but it was just something that I could see like a connective tissue throughout, you know, just before I called you, I was watching this, this is your inside the comedian studio. I was watching you on YouTube. You're the comedians you should know. And there was this, so the listeners should go to this and check you out. You were talking about, you had a bit that you were talking about like wanting to get married, or I don't know if that's it. But you just noticed you were doing your set, and there you noticed a guy that had on an Iowa wrestling shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, oh, did you? And he said, no, I didn't wrestle. And you just went on like, you kind of, it almost seemed like it was a riff where you just like talked about, I don't want to give it away, but it just seemed, what I'm working on now is trying to be more lucid on stage, and not just because I come from the theater world where it's like, I'm going to say this line and I'm going to do this. Obviously I don't do that. I don't do that anymore like I used to, but it's just something like you're letting things happen. You're not just like bound by your set list. Can you speak on that a bit?
Yeah, I feel like I got away from it a little bit in the last few years, mm-hmm. just because sometimes you like are you get to a point and then you're like, okay, well, this show really matters, so like I can't do it here. You know, right. like you feel almost handcuffed by the pressure to like be great, but then you're like, okay, but like when I'm at my best is when I'm doing that. So like, why? So it's something I used to like when I would write a set list back in Chicago, the mm-hmm. first thing I would write was like, number one, crowd work. Number two, my first joke. Like I would always go up and like open by observation of the room, make fun of what I was wearing, something like I never went up and just like cold started doing a joke. And some of that is like bad, you know, because then it was like, well, I should probably write a joke. But like there is for me now why I'm trying to like get back to it is because I think that's when I'm having my most fun.
Sure.
Like there's been moments where I've been on a show that I'm like, well, this is important. I need to just fucking stick to the script and not deviate. And then I haven't done as well as I wanted to because there was something that happened and I felt like I couldn't address it because it was going to take me out of, but it's like, no, it needed to be addressed because then it was weird that I didn't address it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just like, I think that's also like a shitty show thing. Like you got to do these. There was a kid that I was like at a show doing in LA and he was like, you do a lot of shitty shows, like said that to me. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that that was like a what? Reputation someone could have. But then I'm like, yeah, of course.
Why
who are
that?
You?
That's
and why
weird.
Are you not doing shitty shows? Like, to me, I love a shitty show. I feel like I learn the most. You can work out the most. Like if you have a good set in front of a hot crowd, I don't think that proves anything to anybody.
Yeah.
But if you have a good set in like a bleak situation, you like grew. You got better from that.
Exactly. Like just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about,
video games.
Where, yeah. where if you're playing a role-playing game where it's like you're like a not even like Legend of Zelda, but it's like, when you play a game where you grow, your character grows once you experience certain things. If you fight so many times, your experience points go up. And I think that's what comedy's like. Like if you're doing a show at Caroline's, that show where we first met, you're doing a show with like 10 or 12 people and you can get something out of them, you grow, you've learned something. And you can take, yeah. you take that with you. So when you do get in those high pressure situations, that you've been there before, you've seen, you're battle tested.
Yeah,
it's just like Kobe. Yeah. Like I think there was one series where I just remember Kobe just playing out of his mind, and he just said at like a post game thing, he was just like, "We're battle tested. We can do this. We know what it is." You know.
And I'm like Kobe.
Yeah,
you know?
You're like Kobe. Yeah.
That's I'm it. A Kobe. No, you do. Like, I just, yeah, when people like get to shows and they're bad and they're like, oh, it's like, oh my God, that's like, I think as comics, it's such a gift to have no stakes at a show.
Yeah.
I think that's like, that's why I love open mics. I love an open mic. Mm-hmm. I'm like sad I don't go to more. I should. And even when I go to some people are like, what the fuck? Like, why are you doing? I'm like, I love an open mic. I think it's so fun.
Or you just love fucking comedy. You just love comedy, you know?
I just love saying a joke for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, I think, like, personally, sometimes the first time I say the joke is the best it's ever going to be.
Yeah,
and,
that's
like,
true.
And that's, like, really hard for me to, like, rationalize. But it still feels, like, so cool. And there's, like, a process. It's like, here's my name. It's in a bucket. I sit. And, like, I don't know. There's something, like, structure within this like world where there's no structure that I really, and you see your friends. It's like, it's like our clubhouse.
It is.
I like it.
It definitely is. I mean, I think that's like I always said, like when I first started, I wanted to be like Peyton Manning, where it's like you enjoy the process. You enjoy mm-hmm. listening to your set after you're done. You enjoy figuring out where the laugh is or where the order, where placement is. Like, you know, like I was actually doing a set, the show that I did last night, I was doing my bit, and like after my set, I was like, "Oh, that probably shouldn't go. I should say this before I get to to dating, or I should say this before I get to Black Lives Matter or whatever." Mm-hmm. Like it's just, and it's fun to like to figure that out and to have that mini epiphany that I think that's something that keeps you going when you are doing shows that are shitty.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you do a show like, well, at least I said things and I got to hear myself say it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, there's definitely times where, like, well, I really phoned that puppy in. And, like, yeah, you can't be expected 365 to, like, I mean, you should be. But, like, there's times where it's like, yeah, I had to phone this in. On Monday, I had a show and I canceled it because I'd flown across the country. And I was exhausted, and I was like, it's going to be no value to me to go and be tired and grumpy and bad. And it's like back in, 6 years ago, I never would have canceled a show.
Right.
Never. Well, and it's like, I try and do it rarely, but like, if I know it's going to not be beneficial for my like mental well-being, then like, I can't do it.
Right. Well, what is it like in LA? So you've been in three different areas, three different regions of the country, probably more. I guess I want to just get your take on what it's like in LA versus New York. How do you feel? Do you feel it like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, some people say that they think people are more PC here.
Okay.
And I don't know if I necessarily have witnessed that. I don't think it's, I mean, I was doing shows in Brooklyn, so it's like, I don't think anything gets more fucking PC than Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. But so like, if I was coming straight from Chicago, yes, I could see that. But I don't think it's substantially different from like the type of shows you or I are doing in New York crowd wise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know. There would sometimes be shows in New York where I felt like the audience was like, I'm really cool. There was like part of me that I was like, yeah, but you're not, like you're not cool. I am cooler than you. And now I'm going to tell you and show you why I'm cooler than you. And here, I guess I feel like there's a little less than that, but I think the strangest thing about here is you could be at like a dog shit, terrible, low down, nasty show. And like, there very well may be an industry person there. Because, like, they accidentally were there or they were, like, meeting a friend. So it's, like, you're just kind of, like, there's always, like, I was doing a show at UCB, like, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was, like, a good crowd. And, like, sometimes Sunset, it can be, like, sparse. But some of that is just because, like, the way it's seated. But it was, like, oh, this is, like, a great, like, group, and they seemed like hot and good. And so I like said to the woman, I was like, wow, that's like a great crowd. She's like, yeah, it's weird, there's like 8 agents here. And I'm like, 8 agents? Why do there need to be 8 agents anywhere? Yeah. And there was like a boy that they were, and like that may have been an exaggeration, it may have been like 2 and then some assist, but like,
sure.
She was like, yeah, no, there's like a kid here that they like want, they were like there to see a specific person. And so
Brandon Wardell. Shout out to Brandon Wardell.
What's up, Brandon? So there were like, that's like a crazy thing. And in Chicago, we would maybe hear once a year of like someone having a manager and them being in town. But like
somebody like a Waiting for Guffman type thing.
Yeah, it was never like, oh, this like ever. And in New York, I think it's I think it's a little bit of the same. I think there's just less industry there. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there would be times when like I can remember maybe like 4 or 5 shows that I had like agents come to in New York, but there was like a specific reason. And here they don't ever come see me because they're like, we have real clients. But like some people do, like there's like industry showcases here. And so it does feel, it's a business here.
Yeah.
I guess.
Do you feel like, does that make you feel like you always have to be on? Because I remember talking to Clark and he said, it's just going back to learning your craft and just really focusing on the work and not worrying about any outside entities like industry. You're just focusing on your work. And then you get to New York or LA, it's like, oh my God, somebody's in the crowd. Do you feel like you have to be on or just to...
I mean, I try and not think about it because it's like I am very happy with the career that I have. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, if I'm good, that, you know, great. And if I'm bad, you know, you don't want me anyways. You know, you can't. It's like it's like when you look shitty when you already have a boyfriend. You're like, whatever. Like, yeah, I'll go out with no makeup on. Somebody already loves me.
Sure.
But like in sense of like if a person from like a network is there, like, yeah, it is sort of like, ooh, but I don't know. I think you just like you hope you get to a point where you're like, that none of this matters, you know, like,
right.
If I guess I've come like, you know, I've had opportunities that I felt like came later than I wanted them to. And then when they happened, I'm like, oh no, thank God that happened at the time it did. Sure. And so I try and like keep that always in the back of my mind of like, even when I'm frustrated, it's like, you know what? It's maybe not right now. And I'll be better equipped to handle it down the road. And like, is that naive and like bad? Of course. But like it keeps you from going somewhat crazy.
Yeah. What's it like? Are you auditioning more? Are you auditioning for?
Yeah. So when I first got out here, it was like the full swing of pilot season. So that it's like, you know, that was kind of all I did.
Explain that to the listeners. I know a little bit about it, but I want you to break it down as much as you feel so good about.
So it used to be like they would do like a dramatic section and like a comedy section, but now it's like all at the same time. So it starts in like the very end of January and goes till the very end of March. And it's just mayhem. Like every single show that's on TV, but then every single show that you've never seen is being cast. So there's hundreds of shows literally. And you just are, It's a weird thing because you're either auditioning too much and you're like, oh, I'm so stressed and I can't get my, I'm not doing well, or you're like not auditioning enough and you're like, no, like, sure. And I've only gone through 1 year of it and I feel already so much like I just have a better understanding of it just from 1 year. Like I went in rainbows and sunshine and like, this is going to be great, whatever. And then you like get in the throes of it and you're like, oh, this is, but then like at the end of the day, you're like, yeah, it's acting. I'm not in fucking Syria. Like I'll learn the part and I'll try and do it to my best ability.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing about stand up. Okay. Well then I'll go do stand up. Like,
yeah.
You kind of like look around the waiting room and you're like, hee hee, I have a skill that I can go do.
Right.
And so that, I think that like takes the pressure off a little bit, but then, I mean, I remember I said to, I didn't get anything through pilot season. And before I came out, they were like, you're going to get something. And I'm like, I don't really think that's something that we should like bank on. And so I said to one of my agents afterwards, I was like, you know, I hope you're not disappointed in me because I didn't book anything. And he goes, oh, I'll always be disappointed in you.
Holy shit. Oh, that's what your agent said?
Yeah. And like, he may have been kidding, but it was so funny because I'm like, yeah, I bet you will. You know, like it's, I think we're always as comics, like a little disappointed in ourselves of like, God, yeah. Well, I should be doing X, Y, Z. Even when you're like at your best and sharpest, it's like, I still want more. And that's kind of what it is. It just feels like that only times 1,000.
Oh yeah. That's definitely the case. And I think you speak to something like about you already having a skill. It kind of gives you, I think that's a level of confidence that when you're sitting in these rooms, I remember going on an audition. It was like for some BMW commercial or something. And I'm sitting in there and I was just like, I looked at this one girl who was really pretty. And I just said, mm-hmm. I hate this.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are they going to do? Like, just look at us and see how hot we are and determine that. And I, you know, it just felt, but you have to do it. Like it's a part of the job. And you have to do it. And I just started like going like within the last year, started auditioning again and really getting back into the groove and just really not putting too much on it. Mm-hmm. There's like the one thing that I got, like I did this thing for MTV International, like this show Bugging Out. It's like a prank show or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is an audition, whatever. I was like, oh, that went okay, I guess. And then like months later, they're like, oh, they want you to come into this. They want you to come in tomorrow. I was like, I auditioned for that 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just almost like not, you care, but you have to forget. It's like a one person show for the 5 minutes that you're in that room. And it's just, it's a thing that you got to deal with. It's funny to me because I'm okay with not booking something, but mm-hmm. then like within like relationship stuff, if it doesn't work out, it's like, fuck. So it's just, it's like a weird thing.
My mom just I'll be like, oh, I have to go. I have to learn these lines or I have an audition. And then, 2 days later, she'll be like, did you hear anything? And I'm like, oh no, they don't call you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't. And she's like, what? It's just so, and like when you tell it to like an outside person, it's like, what? Why? I was on a show that got canceled, and my mom, I mean, like when I told her, she truly like teared up, and she was like, oh, this is going to happen. Like, this is okay. This is what happens.
Yeah.
This is what it is. But like to her, she's like, you just got fired. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I did, but like, that's why you try and have three jobs. So then when you get fired from one, you still have two other ones.
Right. I mean, I was listening to Kate Beckinsale on this podcast, and she had like lost her father when she was really young. And she was talking about a movie that she felt like was some of her best work, and it got shelved. And just with the way that she felt about it, she was just like, well, it didn't work out. So, we just went on to the next project. And
when you're a hot babe.
Yeah. That's like you're hot.
An easy way to.
But you would never know that there was all this darkness like that's been in her life. I mean, I know she's done like 7 Underworld movies, but the way that she, after experiencing something so like losing your dad when you're a kid, I couldn't fathom that. I mean, I could, but I'm glad that I didn't know what that was like. But just, it kind of, I guess what I'm saying, like, you have to put things into perspective and realize like, yeah, it might suck if you don't get the thing. Like, there's been things that I really wanted, like, oh, that would be really mm-hmm. cool. But then my first heartbreak, I don't know if I ever said this on the show before. I might have. There's this show on BET called Teen Summit. And do you remember it at all?
No.
It was probably.
I just remember College Hill.
Yeah. So you're like maybe one age bracket under me. So
I loved College Hill.
It was that was like, I was a little, I aged out of that. So,
okay.
But I do remember it. So it was a show that because I lived in the Maryland, D.C. area. They filmed it in D.C. And it was a show where they had like these teens that were called, they were basically panelists, and they talked about teen issues, and they were called the Posse, and they were really cool kids. There was one guy that was 2 years ahead of me. He was in the Posse, and he was like a tap dancer. He was really cool and all this shit. And I auditioned for Teen Summit, and I did not get it. I was 16 years old. I was heartbroken.
At 16?
Yeah.
That's tough. That's a TV show.
Yeah. And I was like, fuck. And you get to meet all these cool people and the rappers and musicians. And I think my mom dressed me. My mom put me in this. It would almost be something like Carlton Banks that he would wear if he was like dressing down. And it was just like these linen. Like these linen, I don't know. I don't remember. It was like it was just kind of, it wasn't, they weren't bad clothes,
but it wasn't posse worthy.
It wasn't posse worthy. Like, and then, so I auditioned another year, the next year. And I thought I might have a chance. And I lightened up a little bit where I wasn't mm-hmm. as serious. Still didn't get it. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to change myself try to fit in to what
to
they...
To try and get on Teen Summit.
To try to get on Teen Summit. And, it's just one of those things where it's like you have to... Like you mentioned like being 8 years old and saying, I'm not going to play in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You might be that person that goes and gets tickets and can go when she wants to go. But it's just like, I think self-aware is a major... Being self-aware... Self-awareness is something that's kind of like a theme that comes across in the show a lot when I'm talking to people. But it's just like fuck. Like, that was the first time. It was like, because you don't get everything. You don't get everything that you want.
No.
And then the things that you want may not may not be for you. And I think that's why I like watching, I do like watching shows like what's that Cardinals thing you mentioned? The
All or Nothing.
Yeah, I love those shows. One of my favorite shows is on the NFL Network, A Football Life, where they you watch it.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh my God! Like that's sometimes to me some of those stories really good pieces like those E60s. Those are more compelling than the actual game.
I love Hard Knocks. I think Hard Knocks is like so amazing, and those are like guys that have like reached their dream, and then like you see them getting cut from these teams. And
yeah.
It's like, oh my God, they're in the NFL and they're getting like there's parallels to like the world that we're in.
Exactly.
Like, you know, to our friends and family, we may have like reached a certain status, but like there's like failures all along the road.
Yeah. It's just, it's a constant thing. And it's just, I mean, I guess it's just, I mean, it's part of the game. I was trying to think, there was something else that I wanted to talk to you about, and then we'll wrap it up. So what is it like now that you're headlining a lot now, right? Are you touring more?
A lot seems like a bit much.
Or
but
more, or just like...
Yeah, no, I get to do it, and that's like, you know, wild in and of itself.
Yeah. So what is that like? What is it like doing, like traveling and doing, you know, doing longer sets? And
It's cool. It's very like fun. You do feel like a certain amount of like, oh, I'm the last person. So like, I hope, you know, like there is kind of a little bit more pressure, but, you know, I've been doing a lot of festivals lately, I feel like too. Mm-hmm. And I really love that. I mean, I just like being around other comics. I think the thing that's like hardest about the road is it's just sort of solitary.
Yeah.
And like some people are like, oh, you know, I get a lot of like work done. And it's like, I'm not going to work in a hotel. Like I will lay in bed and watch TV all day. But it is challenging sometimes because like the sets here are like 8 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And then you go on the road and you got to do 45 and you're like, ah.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, almost every time you're like leaving to go somewhere, it's like, oh, cool. This is like my job. I get to do stand up as my job.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm on the, sometimes I just feel like I'm on the fringes. Like I'll do like earlier this month I went to I had some gigs upstate, like 2 one-nighters that like back to back the same booker, and it was just like I felt like it was an escape. It was an escape to like this is what I want to do. Like this was my mistress. I was like that dude in that Showtime show, The Affair. Like I just
your one-nighters.
Going out there and it's like it's definitely. It's just about gaining that, like those experience points that we were talking about earlier. It's just like, this is it. And I just remember like it being a show, like the work that you have to put in, like you're in this situation where it's like, oh my God, this could be a fucking shit show. Do these people know that there's a show? I mean, they look like they do, but then like the host, shout out to Ethan Allman. He like did his thing and got the crowd open. And then I had to do an hour. I did, you know, and it was just I can do this. Like I can do this. It's just I think it's just the more you do it, the less stress you have about it, I guess.
Well, and you never want to be one of those people who just seem and sad.
I kind of lost you a little bit.
I said you never want to be one of those people who's like so bitter and sad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You don't want to.
You kind of have to keep reminding yourself like this is fun. This is cool. This is about telling jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is jokes. So like it should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's a good place to leave it. this should be fun.
This should be fun.
Yeah. Well,
this would be fun.
Yeah. Oh, did we? We didn't talk much about basketball. Are you a basketball Pacers?
I am, but I mean, I'm going to have to be because the Colts have given me nothing to cheer about. So I'm like, yeah, it's all Paul George. That's my number one little baby now.
Well, he's the cover boy of NBA 2K17.
I know. I get really happy. I saw it at Target the other day, and I was like, it feels like home in here.
It's a great game. I need to get it.
He's a good man. I love him.
Yeah. Oh God, we didn't talk about shit. Okay, I need.
We'll have to do a part two.
Well, we should do a part two. You were great, Megan, and I'll definitely. I'd love to have you back on.
This is like me leaving something at a man's house, so I like get invited back. You know, I'll just leave the Pacers here.
Okay.
And then to ensure that I get an invite.
Oh, of course. We'll definitely do it. Hold on the line for a little bit, I'm gonna cut this thing off. Well, okay. Megan, thank you so much, and hey, everybody, I'll talk to you next time. Hey.